from the Doomers Casino in the Quad Cities. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, hosting the University of Illinois Tax School today. Here are the way the numbers in Chicago went into the close, and these aren't settlement prices, as of course I'm out and about. December contract, as we headed into the close for corn at 371 and a quarter, a penny and a half lower. The March at 382 and a half, down 1.5 cents, and May a penny and a half lower at 390 and a quarter. November beans were off 9.5 at $8.83 and a half. The January at 897 at a quarter, down 8.75. In March, 8.75 lower at 909 and a half. The bean oil futures 51 cents lower. The bean meal down 50 cents for the day. And soft red winter wheat down about 3 cents. The hard red was down about a penny as we headed into the close. Live cattle futures around 25 to 37 and a half cents lower on the day. The lead option October at 99.62 and a half. The feeder cattle at $140.50, around 55 cents higher as we settled into the close today. And the October contract in the lean hogs about 80 cents lower at $60.60. December down $1.65. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, to talk about what happened in the marketplace. 9 cents lower in the soybeans. What was the case there, Mike?
Well, you know, it seemed like after Wednesday's big one plus month high in the wheat, Todd, getting up to around 492 and getting to the best price level since the August 12th crop report, the corn and beans went real flatline, and the beans ended up being, I think, more of a short side of a spread trade. I think you've got not only an uphill battle with the U.S. dollar since Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank and China all eased monetary policy in one way or shape or form or another. But I think in the case of soybeans, the African swine fever cropping up in South Korea, being brand new, fresh cases in Russia, and also Philippines being in the headlines, I think these demand concerns more than offset the demand hopefulness of the Chinese purchases and the U.S.-China trade negotiations getting better and better. And you know, one thing I thought was very interesting on Friday's close, especially, was the GFS model continued to pump out a very cold forecast, maybe even freezing forecast for western Kansas, as well as northern and central North Dakota for the first week of October. But the trade really didn't bite into that apple at all.
So some meteorologists recognizing that, some saying it's just too far out, I suppose, to get a good handle on it. Do you think that, I know the trade will watch it over the weekend. What are your biggest concerns as we move through this weekend and towards that grain stocks report that happens at the end of the month?
Yeah, I think the grain stocks report is the natural biggest concern I have for a way for the funds to sell off a little bit and try and fill the gap in the Deese corn once it took over as lead month futures after the September contract went off the board. I think that would be that gap would be probably very strong support once it was filled, though, based upon yield, early yield estimates and numbers that are coming out of a couple states right now. I think the biggest thing for me next week will be the U.S.-China trade deal, because we really do have to have a dollar sell signal to bring the funds back into the market on the long side for agriculture, if you ask me. And right behind that, before the crop report stocks report, it would be the crop progress report. If we don't see any improvement in the corn or bean crops on Monday afternoon, I think the trade's going to have to start to realize that we've got the worst crop conditions in 5 years, and that the likelihood, the practical likelihood of another yield cut by USDA or lost harvested acres will no longer be a low priority, but a relatively high priority. And that goes right there together with the colder weather, with the GFS model essentially being cold for the last 6 days straight and not really giving up on that track for a big, big cool down and really the end of the crop year.
So what are farmers telling you about the end of this crop year? Are they more concerned about corn or soybeans?
It is a coin toss, but I would say just on Friday alone, I had a couple calls on soybeans because there's some early scratching around going on, and there is a true concern that some producers are not going to be able to fill contracts of cash-related hedges. So that's a big deal. I had not heard that up until Friday, but it would make sense if they're seeing a cold weather burst.
Yeah, so they're just concerned they're not going to have enough yield to fill those contracts at the end of the year that they've already put in place. That would be probably a big drop in yield, though, I would think.
Yeah, and we are, you know, we talked about this a lot on Commodity Week on Thursday and Friday. We do have a very similar crop rating and a pretty similar maturity level in soybeans as 2013, 2014, and maybe even 2015. While the corn looks a lot like 2015 in price action right now, the conditions in soybeans would match up more with 2013, in my opinion. I did a special report on Thursday night for clients and subscribers. And if anybody'd like a copy of that, just get a hold of me on globalanalytics.biz and request a trial and request that. But what it showed me after doing that research, Todd, was that 2013's national yield of 44 bushels to the acre is not out of reach at all, given what I'm hearing right now, especially if we do get that cold weather at the end of the month.
Yeah, so they're concerned that they haven't gotten the yield yet. Are they also concerned that soybeans are going to senesce too early?
Yes, they are absolutely concerned about both. And one very good client in north central Indiana who was kind of in a honey hole when it came to corn planting was not so much in a honey hole when it came to the beans and the bean planting, and lost some of the window of opportunity because of a little bit later planting. He's having a difficult time breaking 50, and I've heard that from a couple other sources as well.
Are we very concerned about the corn crop? I'm in northern Illinois now, and this crop is really green.
Yeah, it's too green, if you ask me, because it really makes you wonder how long it's going to take to black layer. Everything I heard this week from producers were, I'm about 40 to 50 bushels below, whether I'm chopping silage, whether I'm cutting wet corn, or whether I'm actually shelling yellow number two corn. I'm about 40 to 50 bushels below last year, unless those clients were in Kentucky and Tennessee, where they're still really, really doing well. The other thing I heard is what you're alluding to, is that I'm really concerned that this corn is not going to dry down properly, and I'm not going to get maximum yield. I've heard from several clients in central Illinois through central Indiana that have been able to get the rains and got those July rains especially suggest pretty strongly that they can't seem to drop below 25% moisture, and they actually would like some cooler weather to bring the moisture level down, but they know that's going to hurt their soybeans and their later planted corn as well.
Hey, thank you so much for taking the time today and for joining Commodity Week yesterday along with Lane Cubb and Jerry Gulkey.
Great to be with you as always, Todd. Thanks, and have a nice weekend.
You too. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulow. He's with globalanalytics.biz. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass is here from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Good afternoon to you, Eric. Thanks for being with us. Can we start with Houston and Imelda and what's happening there? Because it's almost a replay where it just sort of gets stuck, or it's turned around and stayed in place. What do we know?
Well, what we know is that this is kind of our worst fear when it comes to a tropical system. You know, I've taught students for 15 years that the worst disaster when it comes to tropical systems is when they just stop and they sit and spin. And that's what we got out of Imelda. I mean, it was barely a tropical storm at the time when it got on shore, but the problem was the amount of moisture that was contained within it, which turns out is going to be problematic for us later. But as it went over parts of Houston, just got repeated rounds of very, very heavy rainfall. And just for some perspective, there are places around Houston that picked up 40 inches of rain. And that's an entire year's worth of rainfall for us here in Champaign-Urbana. If we were to get that kind of rain over a three-day time period, you would not see dry land up here. And I'm joking about this, but I'm serious too when I say we would be rewriting Genesis chapter 7 should we get all of our rain for a whole year in just a couple of days. So this was pretty tough to see them deal with the flooding that they're dealing with from Tropical Storm Imelda.
Now, I am in northern Illinois, and there have been a few showers that have been passing through, and in fact, a pretty good-sized one this morning. Farmers are going to start to be concerned that there is wet weather here and in other parts of the Corn Belt. How much rain do you think will be expected over the next week or so?
Yeah, well, this is one part of my forecast I really wish I was going to be wrong about, but I don't think I'm going to be wrong about it. We got a pretty big ridge sitting over the southeast, and that ridge is spinning clockwise, and it's pumping moisture out of the Gulf of Mexico straight up the gut of the United States here in the central U.S. And then moving across the northern part of the U.S. is our storm track. So just imagine to the south of the low pressure track, we got cold fronts, and they're weak, but they're tending to stall out right over us. So maybe just draw a line in your head from Michigan through northern Indiana back through Illinois and eventually over to Missouri, Oklahoma, and Texas. That northeast to southwest line there we're going to be just feeding it from the south with a lot of moisture. So I'm anticipating over the coming days quite a bit of rainfall. Around here, while we do have chances today and then again tomorrow morning for showers and thunderstorms, the first of the big pushes of rain will be coming, looks like to be tomorrow into Sunday through this area. But that boundary just isn't moving. It's just staying in place. And therefore, maybe over the next 6 to 7 days, there'll be a region in there that picks up 3, 4, 5 inches of rainfall. And it is the most untimely time of year to get that to happen, given the efforts we want to be putting into getting a harvest going.
Why is it happening?
Well, we got several things that are working with it. So we've mentioned already the fact that we've got the southeastern ridge, and we've got the storm track across the northern United States. But the bigger picture is we're allowing the upper levels of the atmosphere to build this pattern in place such that we keep producing a four corners or a southwest United States trough. And that particular pattern is one that produces a lot of active storm track, storm systems across the midsection of the U.S. And it's something kind of like what we saw last year, although a little bit different setup moving into the month of October, that's for sure.
Well, tell me about that shift into the month of October.
Yeah, well, we're going to feel very wet until the end of September, but some of the things that are governing what's going on at the end of October are much different from a year ago. Specifically, we've lost this El Nino signal. That's one thing. The North Pacific is quite warm, and the chances are that October does come in as a slightly warmer than average month, which would be nice. But the other thing, too, is that pattern is setting up such that October doesn't look to carry the extremely wet bias that the end of September is going to give us.
So as our listeners know, I've been traveling today into the northern part of Illinois. I'm in Rock Island. And as I moved through northern Illinois last night, the crop just kept getting greener, which I suppose didn't surprise me that much because eastern Illinois has been pretty drought-stricken or dry. So that crop dried up pretty quickly, but I was really surprised by how green and end of August this crop looks as opposed to end of September. So what you're telling me is that we'll have rainfall and that October may be warmer than usual. Do you think we'll be able to get this crop settled in and finished up?
Well, we've had this worry all along, just given the late planting, that, you know, if we have an early frost, that would be very detrimental. If we have an on-time frost, some folks are going to be not yet to black layer, especially with that corn crop. At this point, looking out over the next several days, I don't have a frost threat in the forecast yet. And that takes me out about the next 10 to maybe out to 15 days. I'm not seeing it just yet. In fact, we've been accumulating some heat like we would normally accumulate in summer over the last few days. And parts of the Corn Belt, specifically the parts of the western, central and eastern Corn Belt are going to be continue to get some heat. Now, the northern part of the Corn Belt, not as much, unfortunately. But yeah, this is at least a good sign because we need a long grain fill. We need this. But you know, you mentioned that it looks so green. Or, you know, we've been looking down on this crop from space, looking at NDVI images. And we're like, wow, it looks so good. But remember, this time of year, it's not supposed to look green from outer space. So that's actually a bad sign overall. And it just kind of tells you what we've gotten so far this year in terms of our late planting and what it's doing to us, pushing us into the month of October. So, yeah, the good news is with the jet stream hanging out in Canada and the storm track staying north, that is our best possible chance at resisting a really early frost this time of year.
Now turn your attention to South America. They have dry conditions there. And in Brazil, I assume they're hoping to end their dry season so that they can begin the planting season.
Yeah, so it's interesting. The thing that is making us wet right now in the near term is also helping parts of Brazil get a little bit of additional rainfall. Now, you have farmers down there that are just chopping at the bit to get that soybean crop in, because the earlier they get the soybean crop in, the earlier they can get that safrinha crop in, which is typically corn and cotton. But a lot of times what we've learned is that the first rains come in from the monsoonal flow when it just kind of gets ramped up at this time in September. But oftentimes it goes right back over to being dry again. And most of those farmers are going to wait for the second bigger push from monsoonal rain. So a year ago, that wasn't the case. They had already had plenty of rain by this time, and they were going like mad getting that crop planted. It was one of the earlier planted crops on record. This year, I think they're going to continue to struggle with the really, really dry soil and the arrival of the monsoon, which I think is going to push their planting pace certainly behind what it was a year ago, but it could be a little bit behind their normal average planting pace as well. They'll get a good first crop beans. That doesn't really affect you know, they can plant beans all the way to December, but it's going to affect that safrinha crop, that second crop, depending on the timing of getting the first crop in. So yeah, we're going to need to watch the drought in Brazil carefully, and we really need to watch the position of what's called the MJO as we progress throughout the rest of our growing season. So every Friday from now on, we're going to be talking about the MJO and what it's doing to the Brazilian monsoon.
Michael Jackson, it is. I love it. Hey, thank you so thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate it. You have a good weekend now.
You too. Thanks.
That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He is with NutriNag Solutions and Agribolt. Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. Well, earlier in the week, I promised you that we'd talk to Emerson Nafsicker, Extension Agronomist at the U of I, about the soybean crop and how it might finish out the season. Let's begin that conversation now. I asked Emerson about the maturity of the crop and something that I had seen in the field where the crop looked as if in some of the very earliest maturing soybeans that they were ready to go, but there were still green nodes, and what his assessment might be.
It's, we're going to see all kinds of things this year in a general sense. We're seeing this crop, the early maturing ones, the ones that have turned yellow already, some of those are the early planted ones, and some of them may be a little earlier in maturity, varieties that were a little earlier in maturity. We see both of those, and those we could consider kind of coming to a natural end at this point. The ones that were planted after June 1st and are normal maturity, you know, they're starting to change color, and I expect that there's going to be a lot of that this year. With these kinds of conditions, they just do that. And I'm not quite sure what to think on those. There are probably fewer pods, and we think if with fewer pods, it, you know, it may signal these things that well, these seeds are as full as they're going to get, so you might as well, you know, give your nitrogen from the leaves back into the seed and call it quits. In other cases, I do think if it's dried up in some fields, particularly, that yellowing might be a little premature. In other words, the seeds may not be completely full size. So if we're seeing plants that have green leaves on part of them and other leaves are starting to fall off, that's usually a sign that nodes on those plants, the ones that stay green, are probably don't have pods on them. We've seen this a few times before. In 2012, when it was so dry that the lower nodes really didn't see pods, and then we got some rain and the upper nodes did. We saw the upper nodes, you know, filling their pods and leaves dropping off normally, and the lower ones just simply stayed green. And there may not be much to make them not green until it frosts. So people were really frustrated that year. The problem you get, of course, is that where the pods mature and the leaves drop off, those start to dry down. And if we wait for the rest of the plant to dry down, then those get way over dried and we have shatter loss, and they're hard to cut and all kinds of difficulty. I haven't seen too many fields around here that look like that, but they're certainly likely that in some of the drier parts of the state, there could be some of that for sure. Unevenness across the field when they mature is going to be out there as well, partly due to soil moisture, mostly due to soil moisture probably. But the really late planting of second half of June that we have through central and northern Illinois, those are a little bit of a mystery yet what they're going to do. I just say that every day they can hang on with weather like we're having now with sunshine and temperatures in the 80s is going to add some more yield to those. And our hope is that, you know, they'll start to lose their color about the time they're finishing up with pod fill, and that seed size can be fairly normal. We are not going to add any more pods to these plants. That's clear. And so in a lot of fields, I think yields will just be restricted by how many pods with seeds there are out there that are trying to fill now. I did see one in a strip trial. I saw a variety that had lost its leaves. The petioles were still hanging onto the plant, but the leaf blades were turning yellow and dropping off, and the pods were really green on that one. Now, I hope that's just a fluke of some sort, but I think the signals must have gotten crossed a little bit in that, and people can look for that and see if they see oddities like that. By the time leaves drop off of a soybean plant, the pods really should be starting to dry down, and they should be losing their green color. And if they're not, then there's not quite clear whether those seeds are going to have any sugars left in the plant or any source of sugars. If they don't have leaves, of course, they don't have a source, and to know whether or not they're going to get filled normally. Soybeans very seldom are left unfilled. The seeds are left unfilled. By that, I mean they're, you know, they were green and filling and large in size, and suddenly there wasn't any more sugar, like you'd kind of cut all the leaves off. Frost will do that, but I'd be surprised if we see much of that now. That's a bad deal, because it simply means that, you know, those seeds have no more dry weight coming into them. And curiously enough, sugars move in through the pod walls, and so if the pod walls are green, there may be still some of that going on, but you still have to have a source of that sugar somewhere. The pods photosynthesize just a little bit, I suppose. If the leaves do fall off and the pods are still green, they'll still do a little filling of themselves there. The sugars move into the seeds right out of the pod walls, but we're going to see some oddities, I suspect, coming at harvest time this year, and hopefully most of these will shed their leaves and pods will be dried down and stems will dry down so that we can get out and harvest them as soon as we can. I'm a little surprised at the number of fields that seem to be turning color. We didn't know if that process was simply going to extend into October, but here in central Illinois, it looks to me like by the end of this month, most of these are going to be coming to an end, and harvest, if we get good temperatures, then harvest should follow not too long after that.
Emerson Nafziger is an extension agronomist at the University of Illinois. You can read more from him on the maturity of both soybeans and corn on the FarmDoc Daily website right now, farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. And that wraps up this edition of Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.